welcome you again. I'm hoping that it's productive and enriching for you today. I'd like to begin with a short opening meditation to support being present and connected. I'd ask everybody to get in a comfortable position, preferably sitting in some way. Close your eyes and immediately bring your attention to whatever you're feeling and sensing in and through the body. Allow your breathing to be a bridge to your awareness and to the present moment experiencing. Follow the breathing gently. Notice any feelings, any sensations, any perhaps residual thoughts that are streaming through your mind and your consciousness. There's nothing to do with this experiencing, simply more and more creating an inner spaciousness of simply allowing, feeling, sensing, thinking, to simply be. Keep breathing and allow whatever movement in your experiencing, allow it to move, allow it to flow as best you can. Notice any tension or holding in any part of your body, particularly your abdomen, stomach area, tightness, emotional tightness. Notice it and breathe easily into it. Bring your attention to the heart, the physical heart, but also the energetic heart, the place where you feel your deepest longings and what you most care about. Take a few more deliberate breaths. You can leave your eyes open or closed. And I'm going to share a reading that for me is inspiring and touches an important component or part of what today's session is about. It has to do with allowing the experiences that we regard as painful, perhaps the difficult things. It's a reading by John Wellwood from his book Love and Awakening. It is only through letting our heart break that we discover something unexpected. The heart cannot actually break. It can only break open. To live with a broken open heart is to experience life full strength. When the heart breaks open, it marks the beginning of a real love affair with this world. It is a broken-hearted love affair, rather than the conventional kind based on hope and expectation. It is only in this fearless love that can respond to life's pain as well as its beauty, can we be of real help to ourselves or anyone else in this difficult age. So for me, the broken open heart is a quality of coming to my own inner experience in relationship to life's events. And a broken open heart for me means being open to the subtle beauty in pain as well as life's joys. And developing this requires a particular way of approaching our inner experience in the midst of our conditioning. And I want to speak to that today. So the topic is the anatomy of our core limiting beliefs and separation. What happens that creates these core beliefs? The nature of emotional wounding and the creation of core beliefs. And also the focus would be on the nature of mourning and suffering, the difference between mourning and suffering, and how we can approach our pain with the inner spaciousness of compassion and self-compassion. We'll also, under the handouts, give you a list of some of the samples of the kind of core alienating beliefs that arise from our conditioning and our traumatic experiencing. If you have the handout, I'm hoping you do, but it's not absolutely necessary, one that is titled Anatomy of Survival Structures, you can make reference to that, because I'll make reference to it now as I'm beginning. These are dimensions of our being, and they're not at all, this is simply a representation, in my view, of what I've experienced to be the inner dimensions or the inner dynamics of our consciousness. And the central one I put as the core to represent, this is our core essence. This is the place, so to speak, the essence, the essential nature of who we are as human beings. And essentially it is a dimension, a domain of our life, of our consciousness, that is non-conceptual. It is something that goes beyond the bounds of any kind of definition. You can say it is our true identity. And out of this contains certain qualities of our being. I believe we're all born with the natural qualities that we have that are contained in our essential self. And one of the most important elements of this, in addition to those qualities and characteristics, like we are naturally compassionate, our nature is actually one of true freedom, unbounded by anything. The nature of the quality of love, of creativity, and all of these living qualitative characteristics, that is, that are part of our essential nature. There's another part of it that when we come to understand our nature in life, as we begin life in the earlier part of our existence as children, a quality that I think is essential, that's not necessarily limited to childhood, is the quality of innocence. And innocence is something that is lived, is something that is the part of our nature, and it's not a conceptual sort of definition that is one that is the opposite of guilt. I'm not meaning this as a social construct in any way, but as a quality of our being. And one of the ways to come to innocence, the only way I think we can truly understand innocence, is by direct experience of it. It's something that we can feel. And some of the characteristics of innocence are not knowing. There's wonder, curiosity, freshness. And we can see innocence more clearly and more directly in young creatures. We see it in children. We see it in animals. It doesn't even have to be a young animal. Any natural creature, for me, has a quality of innocence. Not interrupted by conditioning, not interrupted by any experience, nothing that's known. And so I'd like you just to do a quick exercise in innocence, is I'd like you to imagine you might have in your life a companion, a pet, an animal. You might imagine the innocence of a young kitten or a puppy or another young creature. And just bring the image to your mind immediately. Sense and feel this particular quality of this being. See if you can sense into the feeling tone that resonates in you as you bring into your awareness an innocent creature. Without thought, without evaluating, there's a particular quality of vulnerability that innocent creatures are subject to, in a way, being impacted by, well, let's just say, other human beings. Just allow that imagery to resonate in whatever feeling tone it resonates with you inside. And then I'd like you to bring another young creature into your mind, if you can. So I'd like you to remember just whatever spontaneously comes to your awareness when you remember yourself as a child, a young child. And you might remember an event, events. You might remember something that was perhaps a favorite thing to do or a favorite person to be with. But I'd like you to bring to mind the quality of your own innocence as a child. If you're not able to do this, that's okay. Just notice what does arise. The quality of your innocence is that you don't know. If you do something that is considered a mistake or something bad by the culture, by an adult, you do it from the background of just not knowing. And there's, if you can sense in your child play or curiosity, the desire to discover, I think these are also qualities of innocence. So I just wanted to stop there. I just wanted to just kind of a quick touching into and just to notice what comes up in you. Stephanie is going to pair you up. And I'd like each person just to have the opportunity to share for 3 or 4 minutes what came up for you in this exercise. Just to share your experience, and that's all, around innocence with an animal, a pet, or the image and memory of your own childhood. I know that was a relatively short period of time, and I imagine that we could have spent much time in this. It was, I think, a very, very, in my view, significant opening or threshold into our heart, which is so important when it comes to self-compassion and compassion for others. This quality of innocence is something that can be a central part of a spiritual practice, to embrace our innocence, to embrace the innocence as we see it and feel it in others. So what I'd like to do is, again, I'd like to touch base with people in just so far in what I've shared and presented and what's come out of your paired sharing. I'd like to hear if you'd like to share and put your voice into the room. I'd like to hear what your experience was or what it is now.
Delight was the word that I was glad I remembered. Delight.
So the word delight is really something that had significance for you, and that's
mm-hmm.
what...
Yeah, it's kind of like the wonder, but there's a little bit more to it.
The word delight has a particular nuance to it. What's important to me is that when you connect it to the word delight, you connect to the feeling tone of it, how it felt in you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, that's the important part, and the words are indicators of this feeling tone. So, great. Thank you.
Alice and I talked about small animals in our lives, and the samenesses were that the goslings, 1 and 2 day old goslings that she had raised, and the miniature lop-eared rabbit that I have had in my household for a year, they both brought out in us this tenderness, this sweetness, this simplicity of joy, and the complete vulnerability of them and openness to life that they both exemplify for us was very touching. It just really pulled, I think, at our hearts. For me, it was a complete crossover with my experiences as a small child having this very tender, needy side that didn't actually get filled in the way, you know, we're caring for these small creatures. And the fact that the animals simply opened our hearts, that their innocence and sweetness and complete simplicity in their response to life was probably the key.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that. For me, it's that beholding or in the face of an innocent creature, the innocence itself opens your heart and it touches you into these spaces of tenderness and sweetness. And that for me is the important part of this particular just little exercise right now.
When I went into myself as a small child, I was remembering a particular incident where I was not, my innocence was not accepted as such. I was rejected. I was made wrong. And what I was thinking about was this thing you said about embracing innocence in ourselves and others to open our heart to compassion, and how when people, it seems, haven't done that for themselves, they can't tolerate it in others, and it's so unfortunate when it's a child.
Yeah, I appreciate your bringing that up, because it's a segue into what I want to share next. In the years of my sharing this work and started developing notion of core beliefs and how that alienates us from more fully experiencing life, the question has almost inevitably come up, is why do we operate from these core beliefs? Why are we so judgmental and defensive and aggressive? You know, I want to really understand what's the nature of why we operate from this place, and why aren't we just open and loving and vulnerable and creative? What happens? So it's a fairly large topic, but I'm hoping to share just, for me, the heart and the essence of my own understanding that I've come to after many years of inner healing and transformation and many years of working with people. But here's the short version of what I think what happens. So I wanted to start with innocence, because I think it's important for people to begin experientially what we're talking about. This is not an intellectual understanding. It is something that we feel. And I don't mean in terms of just emotional feeling. It's something that we feel as a quality of life, so that you are touching into some of the energies, the experience of tenderness, sweetness, innocence, delight. And so just let's take a small framework, just a small snapshot, and just say in a child. And I'd like you to maybe hear what I'm about to say in terms of what it brings up in you, in your own child, in your own, perhaps, any memory that emerges spontaneously as I speak. So the innocence can be said to be a yes. Children come into life. I came into life as a child. When I tune into the energy, it's a yes. It's a reaching out. Reaching out in different ways. But it's an energetic yes. In curiosity, in delight, in wonderment, with sweetness, with tenderness, exploring life. And now there are many times in which this yes is supported. And I want to acknowledge that. It's important to name that. That I believe all of us, we have all experienced the mixture of how we have been supported, how we have been met, how we have been loved, and the mixture of how we have not been met, supported, seen in our innocence and in our life force. But I want to talk just about those moments. Let's just take one moment of it, even though there's a complexity in how we've lived our lives and the experiences we've had. Let's take one moment in what can be called when this yes is met with something other than the unconditional support and trust and love that the yes is seeking. It's met with an energetic no. Now, the energetic no can take a lot of different forms. It can take verbal. It can be what's called neglect or not attending to. It can be physical, hurting, emotional, verbal, sexual. But I want to take not severe, what could be called severe trauma. Let's say mild or moderate. When this yes is met as a no, what happens to us? What happens to the child? What happens to our inner experience? And so I want to talk about that, and this is probably, for me, the most important element of this presentation. And notice what it brings up in you, because I'm going to ask you to share in another paired sharing about this. So this energetic, innocent yes is met with a no in the environment, by siblings, by parents, by adults, So initially, the very first thing that happens in my experience is that there's an initial shock. There's a shock that goes very deep. It's an absolutely unexpected experience. And this shock creates this confusion, this bewilderment in the system, in the child's system. But all of this happens really quickly. Even if it's mild, I consider it to be trauma. It's a traumatic, energetic meeting of this open, vulnerable being, meeting the environment, meeting another person, and receiving a no. And so the first thing is there's a shock. And then the second thing that happens almost simultaneously is there, when we really open to the undefended experience of it, there's a searing pain that occurs. It just hurts. It's just pain that goes into the system on all the different levels. It's actually felt physically, and a deep emotional pain. And then there's something that happens mostly unconsciously, but on the cognitive level, on the thought level, that happens as well. But it's all the three levels, in my experience, is what happens to when this yes is met with a no. Now, I want to qualify that. I wish I had said this before, is that there's a couple of different ways that our yes is met with a no. One is what I just described as a kind of an emotionally painful, emotionally traumatic experience that can be mild, medium, or severe, or some place in between. There's also the conditioning of our culture that is not necessarily emotionally painful or traumatic per se, but we learn certain things of all kinds of things in life about sex, our sexuality, about our emotional feelings, about money. We learn certain things about believing the notion of morality, about God and religion, about authority, and through the domination beliefs around authority makes right, and you better follow rules or else you'll be punished, and so be a good, obedient person, etc., etc., etc. It runs. So there's the conditioning of the culture as well that impacts us, that contributes to these core perspectives or core alienating beliefs that we take on that become an interface between our inner experience and how we meet life. But let's go back to the emotionally traumatic experience, the emotionally painful experience. So at the very purest or deepest level, the searing pain goes to the place, particularly in younger children. I believe this is an unconscious thing, but it's felt and sensed consciously, where it's a threat to the very survival of the being. There's a deep fear of annihilation, and it's felt on that level. I don't want to say too much about, well, why is that, but just to say that, just to name it, that has been my experience in my own internal exploration and in the countless people that I've worked with, this fear of annihilation. And it has a power and a force that is really beyond, I think, what most of us can imagine. And then another thing happens. This happens, I want to say I'm only taking a snapshot here, but it happens, there's a complexity of repeated experiences. But there's another thing that happens is that I think that consciously or unconsciously, the child comes to a conclusion and makes a decision, and makes a decision that is primarily the need to survive, the need to protect and defend oneself, because we just experienced something very vulnerable, very painful. So the conclusion is the creation of core beliefs in life. So one of the most fundamental conclusions that emotional trauma gives rise to is something like, if I was just in my innocence, loving, yes, creative, reaching out, and I received this no, there must be something wrong with me. I must have done something wrong. I am faulty, I am no good, I am unlovable, I am unworthy, I am weak, there's something wrong with me. Now, it takes many, many different forms, but there's this fundamental sense of lack that is really the source of our shame. So this is what I call a core belief or a core identity. We come to this experience that this is who we are. So I provided a handout around beliefs, so there's just a sampling of them. So there's beliefs about who I am, which is my identity. There's also beliefs about others, about life, and about the world. And these beliefs, they go hand in hand. So if I think there's something wrong with me, then I must see the world in certain ways. If I think that I'm unlovable, then maybe life is dangerous and unsafe. Maybe other people can't be trusted. Maybe I create a belief that if you open up, it's dangerous and you cannot trust life. Or that after time after time after time, I don't get what I want, so I believe that life is painful and a struggle. So then, out of life experiences, trauma and conditioning, we create these beliefs, which are conclusions that we come to. And then the other level that happens on an individual level is that I remember creating my own conclusion about my own self-identity became, if I deeply experience myself as I'm unworthy, and that's one that was very powerful for me in my life, then in order to survive, in order to make it in life, I need to create a persona. In order to be accepted, in order for me not to feel what in my internal system is saying the rejection of non-love or judgment or anger, then I have to create a persona. And my persona turned out to be something like, I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy. And as a good boy, a good person, I create these strategies to follow the rules. Don't rock the boat. Don't do anything that's going to upset people. And so this persona is the outer edge. It's the leading edge of how I meet life. And so, again, what's coming to my mind now, this is a topic that has rather a lot of depth and complexity, so I'm just hitting the highlights of it. So one of the highlights that happens here is that when I'm operating from this core beliefs that actually function as protecting my vulnerability and defending myself in any way against feeling the pain of my vulnerability again. I don't want to feel emotional pain because it reminds me of the original pain that I experienced when I was very young. And so defensiveness takes the form of aggression or withdrawal or even some forms of numbness or dissociation. In other words, it takes the form of fight, fright, or flee. Am I getting that right? Fight or flight. And so one of the primary limitations of this is that when I'm protecting myself against pain, I'm also not open to the flow of joy or fun or creativity or love. So I close myself off from the very thing that I want the most. For me, this is the tragedy of this, of the kind of experiences that we have in our life, both the traumatic and the conditioning experiences, that create these beliefs through which we operate in life. The core beliefs become a filter through which I experience life. And the persona, I'll say more about that in a moment, but the persona is actually something that I use to create strategies. And so if I'm really operating for my persona, it's I create strategies in life so that I don't expose myself to anything that could create pain. In other words, I try to create safety wherever I am, meet people that are safe, create strategies that do not bring up my vulnerability. I'm speaking in generalities, of course. And then the filter through which I experience life is that if I have this belief in myself that I'm unworthy, I'm going to interpret things based on this filter. So if somebody does something that I interpret as a criticism, it goes directly to this belief in myself as unworthy, and I'm going to judge myself as, well, that proves it. Somebody is criticizing me. That means that there's something wrong with me and I'm unworthy. If somebody said something that I did that they judge as a mistake, it's going to go through my belief in myself as, well, there I go again, I'm weak, or I'm never going to be successful, or I'm never going to get it right. So life experiences then become interpreted and filtered through these core beliefs, And through our persona that is designed, so to speak, to protect and to defend against a deeply unconscious fear of feeling the pain of our vulnerability. So this is a very kind of a very quick view of my understanding of this place, these protective and defensive structures, which is the outer shell. I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment, but first I wanted to connect with people who I want to get have a sense of any resonance. So ask for two things. Number one is resonant experiences, how this is meaningful to you, or number two, questions for clarity if you're not fully understanding any part of what I said.
This completely resonates with my experience as a child and makes complete sense in terms of how one goes from a place of innocence and openness and vulnerability to having staunch beliefs about themselves and the world. It just really hits me very strongly.
I just had a real moment of insight and clarity. I have just recently gone through a fairly transformative experience of really getting that I was feeling almost entirely invisible. And as you were giving a description of that innocence, it brought to mind my experience my first day at school as a new immigrant in Canada. And having just learned the language, given a name tag where my name was spelt in a completely different way. Right now I can feel that contraction in my heart of not having been seen and so looking forward to that experience and then not having been seen. And I think I've just become more and more invisible over the decades and I just about disappeared. When I realized I was basically falling into this endless pit, I finally had to take action to start seeing myself. And what I've been telling people is I'm finally growing into who I am.
Yeah, thank you.
It's really interesting because as I realized this, as you were speaking to the last person, my heart started to race. So I realized there's something really to explore here. And that is I remembered the fact that there's about a 10-year gap in my life through my teenage years that I don't remember hardly anything. I'm guessing maybe 20%, if that. And what pointed to it was you're talking about the need to flee or flight to where you go to, into numbness and disassociation and withdrawal. And it just hit me really hard. So I just wanted to
yeah.
name that and bring it out so I could start just being more visible with it, more aware.
Great. Okay. So I would like to add to this is that for me, what I'm sharing is not primarily about our past. It's not about the memories I've had and remembering them and what can I do about it. It's really about, given that we've all lived through certain experiences, that these exist in our system now. It's not about the past experience. That how does it show up now in our day-to-day life? It's been very important for me to recognize that when and how am I operating when I'm operating from my survival and protective structures? What are the characteristics? When I'm really operating from a core life-alienating belief or identity, what are the characteristics? And for me, one of the primary characteristics I go into, I'm aware of the contractive or constrictive patterns in my experiencing. There's an emotional tension or holding or not, a physical armoring, tightness, and then there's actually the constriction in terms of my thinking. It's very narrow thinking. There isn't a lot of creativity or flexibility to view or think about life's events or myself in different ways. So there's this pattern of constricted and contracted thinking, feeling, and sensing. So I know that whether I'm consciously recognizing it or not, when I am in life and I'm feeling this experience, in relation to an event, or maybe not necessarily able to identify a particular event or stimulus, I know I'm operating from that place. There's also other characteristics, is that when I'm operating from a protective and defensive structure through my core beliefs, I tend to view others as the enemy. Something stimulates me. My judgmental mind is activated through my defensive patterns. And so what, in terms of language, the connection that I found with what we call the jackal or the life alienating thinking and language in nonviolent communication is this gives rise to right and wrong, good and bad thinking, and therefore language. There's a duality in our language. And for me, the duality is a representation of this fundamental sense of separation. When I'm operating from I'm not good enough, for example, or I am unworthy, there's this deep sense of me, of this sense of me-ness over and against the world and life and others. It's often associated with a sense of I'm alone, nobody can understand me, no one knows what I'm going through, any number of things that create this energetic and this sense of I am alone in the separation from life in the world and other people. So this separation is what gives rise, I believe, to all of our judgmental thinking. So the next thing that we're going to get to is in order to recover this, the only way I can recover this is recover my wholeness, recover the flow, is to be able to go through the structures of defense, to open to them. Because right on the other edge, on the inner edge of my defensiveness, is my vulnerability, is my wounding. It requires a capacity and the willingness to feel the wounding and the pain so that I can restore the life force that's held within the wounding itself, within the knotted pattern. And so I'm going to talk about that in a moment. What I'd like to do, though, is to create some time in our breakout pairs again. For me, this is an opportunity for you to share with your partner in everything that I've been sharing. You share your own experience. Again, this is not an intellectual exploration, but it is an experiential exploration. Could you have a sense of your own woundedness? Did a particular core belief or core identity, are you aware of a belief or identity through which you operate and through which that limits the quality of your experience? Are you aware of your persona? What kind of a persona? How do you want to be seen? Do you want to be seen as a spiritual person? Do you want to be seen as mature, together, intelligent, not at all weak? How do you want to be seen, which is often a clue to the persona? So these are the questions I'd like you to explore and to share in your partner when we break into pairs. Thank you all for taking that time to share and connect with one another. Again, I'd like to take a period of time to address any questions, any insights, shifts, or experiences anybody had from what I shared and sharing in your pair.
I just like to share that just recently I came across a core belief I hadn't recognized, and this exercise helped me come to it more clearly. And the belief that I came to understand is, it sounds like this: I can make choices so I won't be hurt. What I noticed is I made choices in this past year to really take my time to get to know people before I opened my heart to them. And really been blessed to have really authentic, genuine people full of presence in my life. And one of these people who I really had grown to trust did something very unexpected. Basically blamed me for a whole bunch of stuff. And I went into this shock and this searing pain. And I realized that I have this belief that if I choose, in quote, safe people, I won't be hurt, rather than seeing them as whole human beings, you know?
Yeah.
And that realization led to, even the realization was shocking to me.
Yes.
About how it really, out of my need for protection,
yeah.
I was actually not allowing myself the true safety that I want, which is being open to accept my friend in all shapes and sizes that he might appear, you know?
Yeah, yes.
And
yes.
That was both very painful and gratifying.
Yes, I understand. The gratification is maybe a shift or an openness to realize how you are protecting yourself and that there's a different possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I was talking about my experience growing up as a male in the Midwest with bullying. One layer is just being bullied, and the other was my shock at not being supported by parents or teachers at that time. There was not quite the consciousness there is today about bullying, but oh my gosh, I'm really alone. Even the parents are telling me to shape up or don't cry or don't be a sad sack or, you know, shamed out of my feelings.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so that's become very clearly aware to you right now and just in this discussion and in the exercise.
Yeah, I haven't really articulated it to that level, but it's a double layer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for sharing. I want to say not just for you, but for anyone who's, you know, in the process of this exploration, that clearly there are experiences that we've had in the past, and they can be helpful to create a little bit of clarity and connection with perhaps how we're operating now in our life. And I find that that's the place I want to be. This is the place of empowerment, is asking the question and exploring, how does this show up now? How do my core beliefs manifest now in my life? What are the specific experiences, instances? And then in a moment, we'll talk about that and explore the different elements of how it shows up now and what we can do. How can we approach these limiting experiences?
Thank you. In this exercise, taking from what you're talking about before, as a child, the four-year-old that was so open and the big yes was to a sister who was a year older, and then she died suddenly. And there was a deep core belief that I didn't matter, that I was invisible, that I wasn't lovable. And as you said, the orientation towards others was that I didn't matter, that I just was invisible. In the last year, I have taken some time to look at how do I live that out? How am I living that out? And as I was discussing with my partner, something that I realized is this year has been a year of some tears over the amount of life that I lost by holding on to that belief. And I'm seeing that slowly, ever so slowly, as I just been embracing it and loving that part in me that just was open, so open in love, that it's coming back slowly. And my interactions with people are different. I don't have the fear that they're not going to be there or that I'm invisible or I don't matter. It's interesting to look at, as you said, how I'm doing it now.
Yes, thank you. I really love your sharing because I think it points the way to recovering our wholeness when we meet those experiences of fragmentation when we're operating through our core beliefs and protection. And it's a gradual experience of how we can embrace ourselves through our limiting beliefs. I'll talk to that in a moment. Thank you for the sharing. I see one more hand.
I find nothing more valuable than focusing on my core beliefs now. But one thing I want to say is that I think that denial might be my denial or other people's denial. Denial in the culture is what confuses me probably the most. And to see how people deny their original hurt experiences, and that the culture denies this, and if you're into it, you know, there's something wrong with you, something wrong with me. I just like to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Realizing that there's a huge amount of denial is helpful for me to understand the phenomenon.
Yeah, thank you. When I think about what you're sharing, what helps me is to view my own denial and the denial in another at any one particular moment as an expression of their own protection, their own defenses.
Right.
their own conscious or unconscious fear of feeling something painful, or actually maybe even something real like joy. So there's this conscious or unconscious profound pattern within our system. Of course, then, as you said, it manifests organizationally, I mean, as the culture, and as a it continually reinforces my individual protection, reinforces how it shows up in the culture, and that reinforces how it shows up within me. It's a mutually reinforcing system. But I like to remember that it keeps compassion awake in me when I can, I didn't hear this, you doing this, not to judge people in their denial, but to realize and understand that it's just that what we know how to do. We've been conditioned to protect. Yeah. But it makes it a little bit softer within me. Yeah, thank you. I want to say that this topic for me is a rather profound topic, and that whatever understanding or insight or benefit that you all experience in this session, for me, is a taste of it. It's a taste, in my view, of developing some clarity to navigate this inner territory so it can then become a way of life, so that I can then develop some experiential clarity about when I find myself in a limiting, protective, tight, disconnected experience, what can I do? So that's what I want to address next. What can I do with myself? First, I want to realize that it's an ongoing practice, that I want to have an intention to embrace my inner experience in relationship to life. So I want to name first that there's a territory of a dimension of consciousness that needs to be addressed. And I'll name that I think there's a primary dimension of our life where we look at events, the situation, people, our relationships. We can call that, just call that the outer life. You know, what we observe in events and situation and with others. And most of our conditioning, most of when I look at what I've learned, is we learn to respond or react to the outer life. How can I manage it? How can I make it better or change it or run away from it? So the primary focus is on the outer conditions of life. Now, I know I may be speaking in absolute terms, but I just want to make a distinction between the nature of this work is not the primary focus on outer life and conditions. It's on when there's any given experience, any moment in relationship to life or others, there is an inner experiencing. And self-compassion, the transformative process, is coming to the inner experience in a different way. What is transformed is not outer circumstances. Those might change due to various numbers of factors. But what transforms is my inner relationship to my experiencing. Not even the content of my experiencing do I want to focus on. What I said, what I feel, all of that. But how am I meeting my inner experiencing? So that eventually the intention is to approach my inner experiencing in a way that's different than my protection and my defense have taught me to do. What I mean by that is, I'll just as I'm speaking, ask you to imaginatively think of an experience that is painful or uncomfortable. Just to ponder this as I'm speaking, and then notice perhaps the inner reaction that you have. Maybe there's evaluations, judgments, or thoughts of yourself, the other person, or the situation. So there might be this, what you would call the distress or the uncomfortable experience in the form of judging thoughts, distressing emotions, even identifying unmet needs. Notice in the distressing experience part of it, the uncomfortable part, there's another more subtle, what I regard as resistance. Is there a part of you, your thinking, your consciousness, that says, I want to get away from this experience. I want it to end. I want to get over it. I want to feel better. Now, I am imagining that for most or all of you, that's on some level, that's what's going on. That it's a form of protection, It's a form of resisting the experience to the extent that you want it to end, and you want to get through it and over it so that you're not feeling the uncomfortable or painful experience anymore. This is what we've learned. And this is what our protection and our defense has taught us. So what I want to say is the path of compassion and self-compassion is a complete turnaround on that. It's a completely different approach to my inner distress. Rather than saying, I need to get away from it, I need to make it better. Why is this happening? Explain it away. Judge myself or other people. All the many, many forms of resisting what is to go to the experience that I call pain. And this may not be easy at first. It may be really different, and maybe it's confusing. What does that mean? Why would I want to embrace my pain? Maybe my mind will argue with this invitation. But it's about developing the capacity to create an inner spaciousness with regard to the pain, an inner allowing. And it's not just talk. It's not just an idea that I'm going to accept myself. This is more than a cognitive experience. It is a feeling and sensing experience when we gradually and over again, with intention, say, whatever it is in me, this distress, this pain, the sadness, the frustration, the anger, the confusion, whatever it is not the enemy. It's not something I'm going to push away. It's something, it is in me, so that it is means it is an expression of the life force in me. And I want to gradually approach this as something I want to deeply respect and honor the living dynamic within me, so I can begin to relax. And implicit in this is our certain values, which is, I'm approaching my inner experience, even if my inner experience says that I'm unworthy or I'm unlovable, and I am approaching it in a way with respect, with acceptance, so that when I do that, there is an inherent value in the experience itself. It's implicit in the approach of allowing and accepting the inner experience. So the work of self-compassion, a good part of it, is around feeling the fragmentation, the confusion, the difficult experience, and opening to it rather than running away from it. This is the principle of it. And so inherent in that, one of the handouts I'm only going to touch on is a handout on mourning. And I want to say that when I do this with myself, when I feel a disappointment or a discouragement or a frustration, I can meet the pain in different ways. And when I meet it as natural pain or mourning, it's something that comes through as a fullness when I allow the actual feeling tone to flow through me. I don't resist it or push it away. When it's free from the story or thoughts, I feel a painful feeling because there's something in life that matters to me. There's a value or a need that hasn't been fulfilled or met. So the feeling of the natural pain I call mourning. It allows me to recognize that which is precious in my experience, but it's unmet in the situation. So there's a allowing of the fullness of what is missed. On the other hand, the word that I use that's different than mourning is suffering. So when I'm having a life experience and I'm in the suffering mode, the bodily symptom and the emotional symptom is one of constriction. I'm tight. There's a sense of deficiency. Whenever I'm suffering, it's because there is a thought or a story associated that's dominating my consciousness. The thought, like, why did this happen to me? Is this never going to end? I'm going to get lost in the pain. What's the use of feeling this? This person or situation is never going to change, etc. So the definition of suffering is that there's a story or a thought connected to it. So when I come to my inner experiencing, I come to it with a softer approach where there's breathing and warmth and acceptance to the inner experiencing. This is the practice. So I just want to take just a couple of minutes to invite you all as a whole group right now. There is an exercise in compassion that includes mourning. So I'd like you each to identify. Now this, for me, in order for this to be more effective, it requires a specific experience, not a generalized pattern of experience in one's life. But if you could, each person, then also choose something in terms of learning this process. Choose an experience that is real, but isn't something that has such a high level of intensity that it throws you into a space that's difficult to connect to. So name an experience that happened recently where there is a loss, something that didn't go your way, a value or need or set of needs and values were not fulfilled. First, identify that. That's the first step. Identify the factual without evaluating what happened. As you bring this to mind, something that happened in the past, connect with what you're feeling now, not what you felt then. So the first layer is, what is the felt experience? Is there anger, frustration, confusion, despair? You just name it first, the felt experience. The next layer is there some thinking or a story you're telling yourself, an evaluation about yourself, about the other person? Notice the story. Notice if there's a core belief there in the story. I'm unworthy. I'm all alone. Other people are more important than me. And then additionally, this might not happen. While you're doing all of this, you're creating an allowing of anything that arises in your experience. It's an inner spaciousness. Now notice, if there's, it may not be there for some people, but do you have a sense of a vulnerable, almost a young part of you feeling something vulnerable just below the reaction in the story? Do you feel a young vulnerability? If you do, let yourself feel it. Allow yourself to breathe. Just allow whatever emerges in your inner experience. Notice if there's any sadness, more soft or vulnerable version of the pain. Now, in the softer or the vulnerability, in this energy, can you sense a deeper longing? If this is a young part of you within you, what is this part longing for? And just identify and feel the longing. Longing to know that you are worthy, that you are valuable, to be seen as whole. Longing for love, acceptance. Allow yourself to feel longing. And notice the quality, the energy of what you're longing for. Is there something precious or beautiful in what you're longing for? Now, other things might be arising. Maybe other feelings, other anger feelings or thoughts or evaluations, those still might be there. There's a principle in this inner work, which is any core belief, any thought, any evaluation, if I follow the energy to it, it will always take me to what I'm longing for. I believe, for example, that I'm unworthy, I don't have anything of value to offer, that belief can take me to the longing. If I listen to it and feel it, I so long to know that I'm whole. I so long to sense my own value. I so long for the confidence that I have something to give and contribute. If any sadness comes up, just allow the softness and the warmth of the sadness to permeate in your heart. And so I'm going to bring this to a close. I wish we had another 10 or 15 minutes, but what I want to do is, again, create about 4 or 5 minutes for each person to share in your pairing, so you can share whatever came up for you. Thank you all. I just want to acknowledge that I recognize that this is a relatively short period of time to share and connect with your experience with the other person. I regret that. And because I think this is such a valuable process, I'm going to continue working and deepening this process next class. And I may even ask for a volunteer that is willing to be guided through this process I call compassionately embracing for next session. Having said that, I'd love to open it up to hearing some final sharing or questions that came out of this process for you. Does anybody have anything?
Well, I was telling my partner Nadia that I felt like a wrung out wash rag after that last piece, emotionally exhausted, and I could really see the benefit, the goal, and turning toward a painful experience rather than turning away from it, as I so often do, and without even realizing how I've done it. And I'm looking through the handouts, thinking about other handouts I might have, or I may need to create a worksheet for myself to write down the event and what story I'm telling myself about it to help me not turn away, which happens so automatically. I'm looking for a structure to help me turn toward instead of turn away.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, I'm going to provide that for you, a couple of different handouts that are kind of a structure to just go down to. It'll help you connect to your experience systematically.
Wonderful, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, if you want to go and create your own structure, that might be helpful as well. Thank you. I see another hand up.
I'm realizing that I'm feeling a lot of grief.
Yes.
And I was wondering if next time you might talk about how do we live with the outer world and maintain connection with, hold our grief and not become.
I sense the deep feeling that you're in right now, and I really appreciate your question. It's so important for others as it is for you right now. I just want to say one of the exercises is what I call an exercise on mourning, but it's really short. I'd like you to read the handout on mourning. It has some very important information that might support you in coming to your own grief, your own mourning. But so much of the grief that we feel, I think, just want to say one or two things about it, again, focuses on the outer loss. Now, it's important to recognize this, but the depth of mourning and grief is how I can open my own heart in my inner experiencing in response to an outer loss. This is the pathway into the heart. And it really is about allowing. Now, I think that one of the things that happens is that we mix up natural grief, the natural flow, with suffering. And so there may be things, I would just invite you to, not now, but on your own, examine. Is there some story or some thoughts that you have about the grieving experience, about the situation? Notice and name and identify any kind of thinking, anything, no matter what it is, any story, any evaluations. If there's any feeling, any thought even about your own grief, about entering into the softness and warmth and fullness of the grief. So there's a sense of an inner exploration into a territory perhaps that might be new at this depth. So those are just a few things that I want to say, and hoping that it was a little bit helpful. I want to encourage you to read the handout on mourning to the extent that it might support not just you, but everyone, that it might support you as a guide to your own inner experience. And we're coming near the end of this class. I'm going to continue the focus of this for next session about compassion, compassionately embracing, because at the heart of it, I just want to say one thing. This work of self-compassion is not pain-centered. It's not centered on what isn't working, but it's life-centered. It's about allowing all of the different forms of the life force, and I'll just add another word to it, what I consider to be the divine life force, as it goes and is held within our system in a tight and held down manner. It's about liberating our wholeness as it moves within us. So it's a profoundly spiritual process as I view it. So the orientation is to life and how the life energy, the divine energy, is actually in the form held within our painful experiences. So I just want to end there, open to the next class. I'm hoping that it will continue to deepen and explore this territory, and I'm very grateful for your presence and your participation in this class. I'm going to provide the handout that I'm going to suggest that you utilize as a homework. Two of them. One will be called an exercise on mourning. Another one is a short map on compassionately embracing the inner experience. So I'd like you to apply this practice between now and next session. Thank you all very much, and we will talk again next week.